Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 64 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. It's been a bit of a longer break since our last episode, but I'm back and I'm raring to go. This month, we have an interview with US author Erin Zack, and you're not going to want to miss that. It's coming up very shortly. But first, let's see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as finding out what's going on in the world of lesfic and what's going on in the world of me. First up, the Amazon charts, and topping the lesbian fiction charts in the US as I record this on October the 26th is Bernardine Evaristo with her Booker Prize winning tome, Girl, Woman, Other. Now, this one is a perennial favourite that's been bobbing around the top of the charts, and so if literary fiction is your bag, give it a whirl. It's a must-read about modern Britain, womanhood, and the lives of black families. I really must get around to it, but I think I might have said that last time. I'm just really terrible at, if something's a bit too literary, I have an aversion to it. But it's getting such good reviews, I should make an effort, right? Also doing well is T.V. Markinson's The Setup, about an American in London who set up on a blind date her first day in town and then mayhem ensues. Rory and Imogen are the couple in question, and this one might be short but packs a punch according to readers, in a very good way of course. Still riding high in the US is H.P. Monroe's Mutual Benefits. This is the story of firefighter Ashley and fashion designer Hannah. Ashley is gay, Hannah is not, but accidentally comes out to her family, and then the pair's meddling mums set them up on a blind date. It's a theme of the week, blind dates. When they meet, they get on and agree to a fake relationship. Can you guess what might happen after that? Now, I'm a huge fan of H.P. Monroe's books, and this is no exception. Her knack for comedic writing is up there with the best in the genre. So if a bit of a rom-com is your thing, then do give Mutual Benefits a look. Also top five in the US is Natasha West's Now and Again. Now, Natasha is another who's very good at writing comedy, and this book is the story of Juliet, a nanny, and Riley, the daughter of the family that she's working for. Riley had a big crush on Juliet in school, and now they've come face to face again. It's a second chance, it's a romance, it's Natasha West. What more do you need? In the UK, it's still books from mainstream publishers that are ruling the roost, all with lesbian characters at the helm. Claire Chambers' Small Pleasures is a historical novel set in the 1950s. I bought this to read, about a young reporter, Jean Swinney, who's sent up to report on a virgin birth and the assignment changes her life. It's in my TBR pile. It's quite a tall pile. Almost as tall as me. I'm not very tall. Tall for a pile of books. Jessie Burton's The Confession was at number one in the UK lesbian fiction charts for what seemed like forever, frankly, and she's still top five. Her book is a Sunday Times bestseller and tells the story of Rose, Constance and Elise over a span of time. Now, it's got some great reviews on Amazon, and people are, some of them, frothing at the mouth over the lesbian relationships involved in it, so it's probably worth a bit of your time and a punt on whether it might be a goer, right? Still doing well in the lesfic charts is Sophie Ward's new book, Love and Other Thought Experiments, which is also being longlisted for the Booker Prize. The lesfic charts are feeling so literary these days. This one is about a lesbian couple, Rachel and Eliza, and they're happy and in love until Rachel wakes up one day and tells Eliza an ant's crawled into her eye and is stuck there. And Eliza, being a scientist, doesn't believe her. They have a massive row and their relationship is called into question. Then Ward embarks on a series of interlinked stories mixed with philosophy in a book that's been described as science fiction meets magic realism. Yes, I know, it all sounds bonkers, but it's Sophie Ward and I guess she knows what she's doing, right? Lastly, a shout out for Melissa Therese's new novel, In Her Arms. This one is about Reagan and Frankie, good solid names right there. They meet in a bar, share a night of passion, and then go their separate ways, only to be reunited when one rents a cottage from the other. What are the chances? Will they find love where they least expect it? You know the answer's yes, right? Because it's a romance, y'all. Get with the programme. And that's the chart roundup for October 2020. October. In fact, it's nearly November as I record this on October 26th, so we are nearly We're nearly rushing headlong into the last 2 months of the year, which is a bit crazy, isn't it? Happy October and happy autumn to you. Yes, I'm sure you might have had a pumpkin spice latte by now. You might have marvelled at the changing colours of the leaves. It happens every year, and pumpkin spice lattes are pretty sickly. But I've just come back from a few days away in Devon, which was lovely. We did a spot of glamping and went to a couple of gorgeous places on the coast. And what it proved to me is that you might have to go abroad for heat, but if you want good food and gorgeous coastline, the UK has it in spades. And now I'm back and ready to get into the last couple of months of 2020. What a year it's still proving to be all round. I hope you're ready for it too and are managing to stay safe and well wherever you are. So what have I been up to in the couple of months since I had a Lesbian Book Club podcast? Well, it's been a long summer of work for me, which is why it was nice to get away. Before I left for my break, I got the third draft of my Christmas romance to my editor, which was brilliant. This one involves a Christmas tree farm, a singer, a music executive, snow, tinsel, mulled wine, candy canes, in fact, as much festivity as you can shake a stick at. The title for this book is Christmas in Mistletoe, and I can't wait to get it out to you in November. Cover reveal very soon, so watch my blog if you're looking out for that. In audiobook news, Before You Say I Do is out now, read by the wonderful Justine Eyre. It's getting some lovely reviews, so if you love the book, be sure to check it out in audio, or even if you haven't read the book, why not give the audio one a shot first? One Golden Summer has also been recorded and is currently getting the okay from Audible, and that is taking a little longer in these COVID times, so we'll have to wait and see when it's out. Perhaps this year, who knows, but fingers crossed. Okay, so that's all my ebook and audio news. As for the world of lesbic, it's all pretty quiet because award season is done and dusted. I must just say, though, a shout out to Amanda Radley, who was shortlisted in the Kindle Storyteller Awards this year for her book Fitting In. She didn't win, but she did get down to the top five in the whole of Kindle for the Kindle Storyteller Awards, so huge congratulations for that. That's all from me. Now let's get on with the star of the show, Erin Zack. I hope you enjoy the interview. Joining me today is US author Erin Zack, author of The Road Home and Breaking Down Her Walls. Two-time Lammy finalist, Erin has been spending most of her last 4 years writing as much as possible. She resides in sunny Florida and she hopes that's not held against her. So welcome, Erin.
Thank you very much for having me.
No, it's great to have you here. So, with the name Erin Zack, I have to ask you, that is your actual name, right?
Yes, that is my actual name. So sometimes I regret that.
It's such a great name, and it is a pop star name, I've got to say, because it's like, you know, two first names together, so it's a pop star name. So did you ever consider being a pop star and not a novelist?
No, but I always wanted to be an actress when I was a kid. So I could see how it could possibly be a good actress name.
Yeah, absolutely. So look,
I cannot sing to save my life. So being a pop star would be probably not a wise move.
It's not a prerequisite for some of them, you know.
Yeah, that is very true. That is very true. I guess I could pull like a Milli Vanilli.
Absolutely.
And just lip sync everything too. Yeah. So
yeah, just watch the money roll in.
Right.
So tell us a bit about where you're sitting today. What can you see?
All right. So I'm actually at our home office, I guess you could call it, in Florida, in Tampa. As I look out the window, I see our beautiful swimming pool, which I wish it was a little bit warmer to get in. We don't have a heater on our pool, so it's about 73 degrees right now, which a lot of people be like, oh, that's not bad, but it's not warm.
Okay.
So, but yeah, and I actually, we put this office together just as soon as COVID was kind of ramping up, mm-hmm. and we were, you know, kind of on lockdown because I typically, which I saw you are the same way, you used to do a lot of your writing in, you know, coffee shops and, you know, Starbucks, or used to do Panera Bread all the time. So I literally was at a loss. So this is kind of a little respite because I couldn't figure out how to write without being, you know, able to focus. It's so interesting how your brain sort of does that to you. You know, you get so used to being in an environment where you think you wouldn't be able to focus, but you actually focus the best. So it's definitely a switch and changing gears.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I had exactly the same thing. Yeah, I did all my first drafting in coffee shops, and it is just that little sort of gentle hum of connection, isn't it, with everyone. You don't want to speak to anyone, but it's nice to have people around. And right. It's just that, yeah, it's what you're used to, but it's amazing how you can adapt.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and it's nice, you know, I have a lot of like Star Wars memorabilia on the walls. So, and not that I write science fiction, but it's just kind of homey and makes me, you know, feel a little bit at peace when I'm at home trying to hammer out, you know, 6,000-8,000 words in a day, you know, or a weekend, or, you know, that sort of thing.
You look to the Force.
Yes, I try. It's not always there for me. I'm a little like early Luke Skywalker.
Okay. When I interviewed Karen Coolmaker for this podcast, she told me that she's got a life-size poster of Wonder Woman on her office wall, which I loved.
Yes, that is honestly amazing, because I can imagine how that could very, very much help, although I think it might be distracting.
Yeah.
Was it Gal Gadot, or was it like old school Linda Carter?
No, it was old school Linda.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, they're both very beautiful, so
yeah.
I think it would be hard to focus, to be honest.
I do agree, actually. I think it would be distracting, but also inspirational.
Right.
So, Erin, tell me a little bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
So I'll be very honest. I used to, you know, obviously write a lot as a kid. I remember when I was probably, you know, 14, 15 years old, writing about, you know, just whatever came to mind, I would start jotting it down and writing. And I used to journal all the time as well. I remember like one of my very first crushes that I had on another girl when I was in high school. Like I wrote about it a lot because I didn't understand what was going on with myself. I mean, I grew up in a very small town in Colorado, mm-hmm. where the term lesbian was not like in my vernacular at all. And I was kind of just like, what is going on with me? So I wrote about it a lot. In fiction as well as in nonfiction in my journal, you know, just like what is happening? How do I get past this? How do I get around this? Yeah. How do I accept this at the end of it? You know, so it started there, but it's probably like 2004 or 2003, one of the two, I started writing Falling Into Her. And I wrote it as an outlet as well, because I had a huge crush on this woman that I worked with at Bath and Body Works. And I was like, I at that time had accepted myself, and I was very sort of like, what do I do with all of these emotions? You know, my mom was not super okay with me being a lesbian, but I needed to talk to somebody. So it was nice to be able to create some characters that I could talk to and then also have talk for me. Obviously it got published, but it took me about 12 years to finish it, like to literally like stop the rewrite, stop everything about it. Like I must have rewrote it, I can't even tell you, I would say like 8 or 9 times, and then even did more rewrites when I sent it into Bold Strokes and they accepted it. I did more rewrites on it. So I mean, my writing journey has been a long time in the making. It really has. And honestly, in the last probably 2-3 years, I've really kind of gotten into a groove where it's not as much like pulling teeth as it is very cathartic and very much a part of who I am. You know, before it was all because I needed to just get these words down, but now it's just more like therapy for me.
And actually, I think, wow, 12 years from first starting your first book to getting it out there, that shows you've got grit and determination, right? And
I hope so.
And all the rewrites. I mean, I think I probably started a few different books, and my first book took me 5 years, and I thought that was a long time. So all the rewriting must have taught you something.
Oh yeah, it was intense, to be completely honest. I think a lot of, I don't want to say like I'm a perfectionist, because I really don't feel that I am, but I never wanted to stop working on it because I always felt like it could just be better. And when you look at the very first version, which I actually did about 2 weeks ago, just because I was like, I want to see, it grew so much and my writing changed so much, you know, throughout all of those rewrites. You know, I'm very happy I did them, and I think it kind of helped me figure out what kind of writer I wanted to be, you know, mm-hmm. who yeah. I wanted to I don't want to be like anyone else. You know, I want to be my own brand, my own everything, my own voice. I don't want someone to pick my book up and go, oh, wow, this sounds a lot like, just throw in any author, any lesbian author. I don't want people to do that with me, you know. So
I read The Road Home in preparation for this podcast, and it did make me shed a tear. It was it was totes emosh, and it is Gwendolyn's book and tells the story of her romance with Lila, but there's also story of family communication breakdown, family secrets, and heartbreak. So tell me a bit about your inspiration for writing that one.
So a lot of that did come from my personal experience with my mother's fight for her life with cancer. So a lot of that was my own personal journey with my mother. I was not estranged from her for 17 years or anything like that, but I definitely had a very interesting relationship with my mom after I came out, you know. So she was not super excited about it at all, and it took us a few years to get to the point where I felt like she loved me again, which is sad to say. I'm sure she never stopped loving me, but then she was diagnosed with cancer, and you know, you realize how important your mother is to you when it's possible she's going to not be here any longer. Yeah. I know a lot of people are like, oh, my mom's my best friend, and that's awesome, and I'm very happy about that for those people. And at the end, my mom really was my best friend. But I wanted to be able to kind of, I lost her, it'll be, I think, 9 years ago.
Okay.
Right, 9 years ago. So in November. So 9 years ago, I, you know, lost one of the most important people in my life, and then to kind of, I'm still not completely over it, you know, and I wanted to sort of find a way to deal with that pain. And I decided to write about Gwendolyn because she was a lot of me, but also stronger than I could ever be. And I thought that it would be nice to be able to write about a relationship where she definitely needed to fix it, but she was forced to fix it, and then in the end was sort of like, I'm so glad I fixed it. So that was really the whole purpose, was trying to figure out a way to kind of put my story into someone else that was just stronger than I could ever be, and more alert than I could ever be, and just everything that I could ever yeah. be. Like, she's one of my very favorite characters I've ever written.
Yeah, no, she's a really cool character. But I think you actually definitely did sort of embody the spirit of her, because I really did feel that you left it on the page, you know, that the emotions were very heightened in there. And did the book writing it help you process your feelings?
Yes, actually it did. I mean, I'm not trying to sound crazy, but like normally speaking about my mom would get me very emotional and very choked up. I'm still emotional and I'm still sad about it, and it's really interesting because I feel like a lot of people say, oh, it gets easier. No, it doesn't really ever get easier. Like, losing a parent never gets easy. It just gets less raw. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's a sore that never really heals. Mm-hmm. And this has made me able to say that without crying while saying it. So that's good. Yeah. But I cannot even tell you how many times I was in Panera crying while writing it. So I'm sure I looked like a complete lunatic, but it was so good to be able to get those feelings out onto the page. And I'm very happy with how it turned out. I really am.
Yeah. And at its heart, the book is a small town romance and sort of classic big shot comes home tale, or not quite big shot, but it's also an enemies to lovers. So are they favourite tropes for you? Did you consider them when you were putting the book together?
Yes and no. I obviously sent in the proposal to our editor, Sandy Lowe, and Sandy was kind of like, I don't really like what you're doing here, because at the beginning, Lila was not younger, nor was she was kind of Lila was originally the mom's best friend and older than Gwendolyn, so it would have been sort of like an age gap romance as well, but it would, the, you know, Lila would have been close to 60 instead of, you know,
oh, okay, yeah,
yeah, so
that would have been very different.
Right, exactly. So she was like, why don't we change this up a little bit? And I was just like, okay, I'm open to anything. So we went back and forth, probably like, I would say 10 emails, kind of hashing out what this whole thing could look like. And it became Lila was, you know, this person that kind of took Gwendolyn's spot. And I'm not going to lie, I was hesitant because I was just like, I don't know if I can get my head around that. But I feel like that helped Gwendolyn not be able to get her head around it in the beginning. And it definitely, you know, ended up working out well because I feel like Lila was able to kind of open up Carol's mind in the end. And it becomes more, yes, enemies to lovers, but it's also friends to lovers because they form this friendship and then they form, you know, this relationship together. So,
and the dialogue in the book, I think that's cracking as well. Do you have any tricks for anybody listening who wants to write great dialogue?
To be completely honest, my way of writing dialogue is I write what I would literally say in a conversation. I put myself into these characters' mouths all the time, which sounds really weird when I say it like that, but I really do, because I feel that in order for dialogue to be like actually how it would sound, it needs to be at what people would really say. You know, I mean, I do a lot of italics that ends up getting scrubbed out in, you know, editing process, but I feel I'm very emphatic when I speak about things, and I think that comes across in a lot of what I'm writing, because I think that my characters need to be able to talk about things, because I feel that that's such a thing that doesn't happen, is when characters don't talk and it's all internal and then they, you know, blah, blah, blah. As someone who wants to start writing and wants to write great dialogue, you just need to listen to how people speak. You need to listen to how people have conversations together. You need to look at their facial expressions, observe everything around them and how they're acting, what they're, you know, fidgeting with, if they're tearing up, you know, a Splenda packet in half while they're talking, peeling off the beer label at a bar, you know, anything like that, that makes the character seem more real. Mm. I feel that all of that lends to great conversation, because it's not just about what they're saying, but it's also how the other person is perceiving them, you know, seeing them sitting in front of them. You know, I always call attention to, you know, a glass being held by their hands, you know, because a lot of times you're listening, but you're not maybe completely focused on their face. You're observing everything else. So I think it's important to kind of get the whole picture.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always looking for ways writers deal with that. How can I change it up, what they're doing when they're listening and things like that? Do you, a question that always gets asked to me, my answer is no, but do you listen to other people's conversations when you're in the coffee shop, say, when you're allowed to go there?
Not typically, no, because I normally put my headphones in and kind of, you know, head down, write as much as I can. But when I'm not writing, absolutely. Right. I'm always kind of eavesdropping, which may seem a little creepy, but I really think that it lends so much to experiences, you know. And I feel that, you know, one of the things that I learned at a conference that I went to, and Elizabeth Sims was a speaker, she said, you know, what a writer does and what they experience in life, you know, it ends up on the page and it becomes more real. So I'm not very outrageous when it comes to going out and experiencing all these different things in life. But I feel that a lot of my experience are emotional. So I'm able to, you know, if I can listen to a conversation and bring that to life on the page, in the sense that their reactions, how people, you know, are perceiving them from the outside, that sort of thing, I think that that really does help. So I do listen, but yeah, not when I'm writing.
Yeah. And you mentioned Elizabeth Sims there. I've just read my first Elizabeth Sims book, and I was absolutely blown away. Is she a fantastic speaker as well?
Yes, she is. She's very good, because she kind of just like draws you in. You kind of forget that you're not having a conversation with her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like everybody kind of fades away and you're just kind of focused on her. She can break down a scene really, really, really well. She is who I also, you know, learned about. If it's fiction, you're allowed to do whatever you want in fiction. Like, it's false. Fiction is false. It doesn't matter if this particular character, you know, doesn't doesn't know how to skydive, if you can research it and figure it out and have them skydive, then great. You know, it's a different experience for every single person. So it was really exciting to listen to her and have her break down scenes and dialogue and all of that. Yeah.
Mm. So you just released a new book, The Other Women. So tell us a little bit about that one.
So The Other Women, first of all, it takes place in Las Vegas, which I absolutely love. I started writing it a while ago, obviously. And I would say that a lot of emotion ended up on the page in that one as well, because I feel like heartbreak is something that everybody can kind of understand. And heartbreak runs through the vein of this book, like all the way through to the very end. And I think that one of the things about this book, and it's about two women who have had their heart broken by the same woman, they meet and they have like almost like an insta-love kind of connection, and they're neither one of them understand this connection, but they kind of just go with it because they are so ready to not be hurt anymore. And they obviously go through this whole love affair while in Las Vegas. One of the things that kind of stuck out to me is this is a book about finding yourself, and I put it in Vegas for a couple of reasons. One, I think Vegas is just so fun, but, and I don't think I'm in the minority on that, but I know a lot of people don't like Vegas, but I really like Vegas because I feel like there's lights and there's glitter and there's so many different types of people. And if you like people watching, it's great. If you like gambling, it's great. If you want to shop, there's so much to do there, but it's easy to lose yourself there, but it's also really great to be able to write about people that are able to find themselves there. Mm-hmm. So that is what I really wanted to get across in that book, because these are two women who are lost and they find each other and then find themselves through that in one of the hardest places, you know, one of the most gritty, like lights and, you know, looking good all the time. And so,
well, you sold me, because I am in the majority, I'm not sure, but I love Vegas. I've been two or three times, and I'm not a gambler at all, but I just love, I find it really relaxing for some, like, right. I just like lying by the pool, going for nice dinners, doing a bit of shopping, yeah, like you say. And I saw Barry Manilow there, and you can't beat that, can you?
No, not at all. I think it was last summer. It seems like 2020 has been like 89 years long.
It has, of course, yeah.
So I think it was last summer I went with my girlfriend and a couple of our friends, and my girlfriend's daughter, Katie. We went and we saw Celine Dion, one of her very last shows. It was literally one of the, like, my most like life-changing concerts. Like, it was amazing. Yeah. It was so fun.
Yeah.
It was amazing, yeah.
Which hotel was it in? Do you remember?
It was in Caesars. Yeah.
Caesars. Okay.
And we stayed in the Cosmopolitan, which is, you know, just a couple casinos over.
Yeah.
But it seriously, like, I just love Vegas. I just want to go right now.
Let's all go.
I know, right? I'll see you there.
Yeah, yeah, okay. We'll have a cocktail around the pool.
Perfect.
Yeah. So you set a couple of your books in and around Chicago, and I also set one of my books there after visiting in 2017. And I think it's my favorite U.S. city. So do you love Chicago as well?
Yes. I actually, Chicago is my favorite U.S. city too. I love Chicago. So I grew up outside of Chicago in Northwest Indiana.
Okay.
So it was like probably 35 minutes from Chicago in Valparaiso, Indiana. And it is literally one of my very favorite cities. I mean, like, things to do to go to, I love to go to Chicago. I literally love it. Like, I remember we would go visit, and the minute I'd get there, like, my stress level would go down. You know, and the minute we're getting ready to leave, my stress level's back up. I'm like, ugh. Like, driving in Chicago does not upset me. I love the pizza. I love the food, all of the food. I love the smells. Like, it's gritty, and it's, then you walk around a corner and you smell the food, and then you know, you keep walking, you talk to people. I'm very outgoing when it comes to talking to people, like, just, hey, where are you from? You know, that kind of thing. So it's just a lot of fun in that aspect too. Just the different types of people that visit, the shopping, the Lake Michigan being right there. And Lake Michigan is such an enigma when you think about it. It's a lake, but it looks so much like an ocean. It's just incredible. I love it. I absolutely love it.
There you go. We love all the same places in the U.S.
I know. We hang out when you're over here.
I know, right? my wife and I went there in 2017 after going to a wedding in Canada, and her friend lived right like on the lake. And he gave us his apartment for a week. I mean, isn't that nice? He moved in with his girlfriend. So we had an apartment like overlooking the lake. It was incredible. I loved it. I want to go back.
Yeah. It's such a, and the skyline, like it's just amazing. I love it. I love it.
So I hadn't read one of your novels before reading The Road Home, but the way I got introduced to you was I read your short story in the Summer Loving Anthology, and I loved that one. So, you're welcome. So, which prompted me to get in touch. So, what do you prefer writing, novels or shorts?
So, to be completely honest, I really loved writing that little short for Summer Loving. I don't want to say it was easy to write, but it just came to me very easily. So that I really enjoyed writing, but I really like novels because the last short story I did before Summer Loving, I actually wrote a short for, it's called Hot Ice, and it's with Elle Spencer and Aurora Ray. They both wrote two shorts as well.
Okay.
And, or novellas.
Yeah, they've both been on these podcasts, so.
So it was like, it was hard for me because I wanted to say so much in such a little amount of time.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know. And I feel like a lot of the reviews were like, this story should have been longer, or there was too much in this story. So that was really difficult for me to, I'm obviously long-winded, so I feel like my books are too, I guess. So I couldn't, maybe now that I understand a little bit more about writing a novella, like don't put so much into it, like you need to have a clear, concise, you know, da-da-da-da-da. Maybe that would be a little bit easier, but I mean, at the same time, Summer Loving, that little short story came so easy and I loved it. So I think I would love to do it again because it just was a lot of fun. But novels actually seem to come a lot easier to me.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I would agree. I really want to get into short story writing, but I find them really hard because for the reasons you said. So
it's my
goal for 2021. I think it was my goal for 2020 as well. But you know, all the goals for 2020 went out the window, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
We're still here. That's the main thing. So you've written a handful of books, quite a big handful of books, a stack, let's call it a stack, prior to this one, and your style has made you become a reader favourite. So if someone's coming to your books fresh, which one should they go for first?
I would probably say my first one that people should read would be Breaking Down Our Walls. I think that's kind of a favourite among some of my readers. Because it just, well, it's one point of view, so it's very different. It kind of introduces you to my writing style, which is I write very much the way I speak. And I think that, well, Julia, who that's the point of view it's in, is definitely one of my favorite characters. And I think that it kind of highlights what I can do as a writer as far as scenery, as descriptions, as you know, dialogue. So but then I would say The Road Home, and just kind of just really dig your teeth in and cry a little, but hopefully be better by the end of it.
Okay, get a tissue,
right?
Now you also co-host a podcast called The Weekly Wind Down, so if listeners are loving you and want more of you, what can they expect on that?
So that is actually 4 and 5 of us, typically once a week we get together. It's been Friday nights lately. We record an hour and 20 minutes about whatever's going on that week. So it really is a wind down. We normally drink wine, and I don't. I always drink vodka, I'm not going to lie. And by, you know, the beginning of it, we're completely sober. By the end of it, we're, you know, pretty tipsy. Mm-hmm. And we have lately been talking a lot about American politics. So
surprisingly,
that's something people want to get into, right? I don't know if you really want to get into that. It is really, it's Jackie D. She is a Bold Strokes writer. Jean Copeland is also a Bold Strokes writer. And then Stacy and Stacy are two of Jackie's friends. Stacy, one of the Stacys is political. She loves politics, and the other Stacy, her name is the old school new age mom. So she brings kind of the straight, you know, mother side of things to it, The other Stacey brings the single life of, you know, living in California, political side to things, and then Jackie brings the married lesbian mom side of things. Mm-hmm. I bring the crazy dorky side of things, and then Jean Copeland brings the feminist side of things.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of mix of everything.
Okay, so wine, politics, whatever's on your mind.
Absolutely. We always do this thing called, what are you obsessed with? And it's basically literally, what are you obsessed with? Like, you know, one week it was, I watched Euphoria on HBO, so I was obsessed with that, you know, sort of thing. So we kind of do a little bit of, I don't want to say pop culture, but a little bit of pop culture as well.
Okay, cool. So are you a full-time writer?
No, I am not. No, I have a full-time real-life job. I wish I could be a full-time writer, to be completely honest. Maybe one day, I don't know. But yeah, it's just a part-time thing for me right now.
Okay, so what do you do for a full-time
I
job?
Actually run a lawn maintenance company.
Okay.
In Florida. Land care is very, very, very popular. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, my uncle owned a company and had me come down and learn how to run it, so now I run it.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. So I could see that turning up in a book, right? Or if you don't write it, I might.
Right? You can do it.
Okay.
I don't want to write about it.
No, you do it all day.
You need someone to talk to about research.
Okay. I'll give you a call, yeah. Right. So how do you manage your writing time around sort of having a full-time job?
I typically write on the weekends. That is when I write. Or Friday night, Saturday during the day, Saturday night, and then Sundays.
Okay.
You know, my girlfriend and I have different schedules too, so it's, you know, on the weekend I don't see her much, so it's easy to kind of get my writing done then.
Okay.
Every now and then I'll write in the evening, but I don't do it a lot.
Okay. And do you have word counts, or do you just sort of go with the flow?
You know, I do 500 words at a time, and then I up it. So I write 500, and then I go to 1,000, and then I go to 1,500, and then, you know, by the end of it, normally I'm at 6,000-7,000 words. I try to always get at least 10,000 words a weekend when I'm really in the thick of it, but I've been known to get 12,000-13,000 in a weekend, just because if you're writing for 8-9 hours a day, I mean, it's, yeah. You know, you should be able to hopefully hit that.
Well, yeah, not if you're just starting out, but yeah, definitely.
Right.
If you've got the wind behind you and the experience,
right.
For sure. But I think this is your 12-year dedication project coming back, right? Because you're working all week, and then you're going writing 8-9 hours at the weekend.
Right, exactly.
And you say in your bio you're often found in your kitchen. So, what's your signature dish?
Honestly, I love to grill. I love grilling. It is one of my very favorite things to do. I love grilling steaks and chicken, and I grill pizzas. We make little pizzas all the time, and I grill them. You know, I like grilling vegetables. So anything that you can grill, I grill. I love to grill. But one of my favorite things to do is make fillets, and I do like a Parmesan crust, and I do, you know, like red potatoes with garlic butter, and you know, a big salad with a great like Italian dressing that I make from scratch. So that's my favorite meal that I make.
Okay, that sounds good. After Chicago and Vegas, we'll come around to yours for dinner. Okay,
right. Sounds wonderful.
I bring the wine.
All right.
Or the vodka.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, is there a best bit of publishing advice you've been given?
My best piece of advice I've been given is probably don't give up. If you send something out and it gets rejected, just do not give up. That just doesn't mean that you're never going to be published. It just means those people didn't want to publish you. So do not give up.
Yeah.
Don't stop writing and don't give up. It's a hard world out there. There's a lot of writers. So you have to have the perseverance to be able to say, you know what? I'm going to keep going. I don't want to give up. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely good advice. And what are your publishing plans for 2021?
So I have a book out in March called Guarding Evelyn. And then I have another book out in June called Swift Vengeance. And it's a book I co-wrote with Jackie D and Jean Copeland.
So you did a bit of a co-write.
It was my first time. It was fun.
Yeah. When is that out?
That is out in June.
June. Okay. Cool. So we'll look out for those. And final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
This is the one question that kind of just derailed me, but I would probably pick Stephen King because I love Stephen King books. And then I would probably pick, man, this one just gets me. See, I read a lot, but I probably don't read as much as I should these days. But my very favorite book ever is Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, so I'd probably pick her.
Okay, that's you got some dark parents there.
I know, and that's where it's like I love writing romance, but I love reading dark things.
Right. Okay. And no, they're two great choices, and you'd be very surprised how many lesbian writers want Stephen King as their father. Right. Yeah.
He's a little creepy, but I love him.
Yeah. Tell us where readers can find out more about you, Erin.
All right, so obviously I'm on Facebook, obviously facebook.com, and it's Erin Zack. And then at my website, erinzack.com. I'm also on Instagram, Erin Zack Writes. Those are probably the three biggest ones. Twitter as well. Normally you can find me ranting about Trump on Twitter. So
okay. I'll go over there and look forward to some great rants, because, you know, he's giving a lot of material at the moment, isn't he?
Right? Oh, yeah. My God.
Okay, well, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you so much, Claire. I've had a lovely, lovely morning with you, and it's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, see you in Vegas.
All right, bye. Sounds great.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. This is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to find out any more about me or my books, just head on over to my website at www.clairelydon.co.uk. And while you're there, you can sign up for a free lesbian romance by filling in your email in the box at the top of the page. My books are also available anywhere books are published or streamed. Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Apple, Google, Bella Books, Ilva Publishing, and direct from me on my website. Again, that's www.clairelydon.co.uk. And there's always a bargain to be had. Thank you so much to The Lesbian Lounge for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And join me next month when I'll be having some more hot book club action. See you then.